Well, welcome, and thank you for joining us in this study of the Book of Proverbs, the wisdom book, one of the wisdom books in the Bible, in the Old Testament, and a book about which many have wondered and possibly have been unable to formulate a real conception and meaningful view of, because it is a kind of a mysterious book, and it's not one that's taught from very often. So you should be appreciating our journey through the book, and hopefully you're getting something from it. We are now at a place where the Book of Proverbs is now taking a little bit of a turn, and instead of being kind of granular, which most of the middle of the book is, we're now getting toward the end, and the book is now changing its texture and becoming a little more chunky. The instead of having just a verse and then a verse and then a verse and they're all discontinuous, now we're really getting into some more flow and some more cohesiveness, and that's kind of fun. We'll have some fun with that. In other words, we're getting packets now instead of droplets. And that's good. That's really good. What I want to do is look at chapter 22. And chapter 22 of Proverbs is where this cohesiveness begins to show itself again, just like it did, before we got to before we got to chapter 10 or 11 or 12, somewhere in there, and it became, as they say, very granular. Now it's a little more blockish, a little more chunky, and that makes it easier to read and easier to conceptualize, and that's good. That's a good thing. So over to chapter 22, and what I want to do is I want to go ahead and read 17 through 21. And the reason we'll read this is because it's sort of a new introduction, in the middle of the book, or really, two-thirds or so through the book, we have a new introduction, and this is because, as I say, things kind of change. The texture of the book changes a little bit. So verse 17 of chapter 22. Incline your ear and hear the words of the wise, and apply your mind to my knowledge. For it will be pleasant if you keep them within you, that they may be ready on your lips, so that your trust may be in the Lord. I have taught you today, even you. Have I not written to you excellent things of counsels and knowledge, to make you know the certainty of the words of truth, that you may correctly answer to him who sent you? You see what he's saying here? It's a kind of a new introduction. And he seems to be Solomon introducing a new section of the book. And look what the things he says. He says, incline, verse 17, incline your ear. He says, apply, in verse 17, apply your mind. He says, let's see, trust, in verse 19, so that your trust may be in the Lord. He says, I have taught you, I have written, verses 19 and 20. So he's kind of, again, kind of turning a corner and kind of introducing a new section. Now, what I want to do is break the next few chapters 22 through 24. I want to break them into three divisions, if you like. And those divisions are interactions, that is, interpersonal interactions, one person with another. So Solomon will cover that. Another thing he's going to cover in this section, he's going to cover the dangers of influence. That is, when you have power, when you have authority, what you should and should not do with it, the dangers of it. And then we'll also look at what Solomon will say about training children, a topic he has covered a lot in previous chapters, and which he'll come back to in chapter 23. All right, so let's dive in. Let's do this. Let's go chapter 22, verses 23 through 29. Do not rob the poor because he is poor, or crush the afflicted at the gate. For the Lord will plead their cause and take the life of those who rob them. Do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man, lest you learn his ways and find a snare for yourself. Do not be among those who give pledges, among those who become surety for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should he take your bed from under you? Do not move the ancient boundary which your fathers have set. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. So this takes us to the end of chapter 22, and what he's talking about is people dealing with people, your interactions with people. And we could, you know, exposit a few of these pieces here specifically, but in general, he's talking about people and their dealings with people, with other people. And there's some good, some really neat stuff in here. Notice how he starts, don't take advantage of the poor. That's one of the themes that Solomon is big on, for sure. And then 24 and 25, verses 24 and 25, it's about the company you keep. Do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man, lest you learn his ways and find a snare for yourself. The company you keep will affect you. Next thing we have is about co-signing, verses 26 and 27. Which Solomon will touch on pretty frequently in Proverbs. He mentions going into debt on the behalf of another person as something to avoid, something you don't want to do. And then, near the end of this section we just read, he's talking about your work and the fact that, you know, don't worry about how your work is different than the other person's, or your job doesn't pay as much as, you know, the other guy. You know, do your job as best you can. And be diligent, be faithful, and you will be rewarded, he says. You will be rewarded. You will not stand before obscure men, he says. So there's some stuff about interactions. And if we jump over to chapter 24... the whole chapter, all of chapter 24, is also about interactions. So we have the latter third of chapter 22 and all of 24 on the same subject. And we won't look at the whole chapter of chapter 24, but I do want to touch on a couple of things. Let's look at verse 15 of chapter 24:15. Do not lie in wait, O wicked man, against the dwelling of the righteous. Do not destroy his resting place. For a righteous man falls seven times and rises again, but the wicked stumble in time of calamity. Verses 15 and 16 of chapter 24. Look what he says. He says, you know, don't hurt your neighbor. Don't go after him. Don't be malicious toward him. And then he says, you know, the Lord's looking out for someone. And that person, you know, the Lord looks out for people. And those people, they can fall seven times. Now, the word seven, the number seven, as we've said before, is a metaphor in most instances of completeness. Comprehensiveness. So what Solomon is saying, you know, you may see a good man or a righteous man fall a bunch, fall a whole lot of times, have things go wrong, even be, you know, maligned or hurt by other people. But what does it say? But he rises again. The Lord keeps picking him up. Then he says, but the wicked stumble in time of calamity. Now, that seems like a simplistic statement, and really it seems to lack, you know, it seems to lack substance. But what that's saying is, that the Lord doesn't always help the one who doesn't love him. He doesn't always pick him back up. Many scriptures say that he does, but sometimes not. Sometimes not. And maybe even more to the point, that little verse, the wicked stumble in time of calamity, unlike the good man or the righteous man, the maligner, the oppressor, doesn't get back on track sometimes, doesn't get picked back up, some permanent aspect of his falling lingers in his life. Do you see that? It's pretty interesting. Again, the latter third of chapter 22 and all of chapter 24 are about man dealing with man. Let's look at another one, verse 17 of 24, chapter 24. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and be displeased, and he turn away his anger from him. Wow. Wow. He says, you know, it's okay that the Lord, you know, delivers you and judges those who hurt you and that sort of thing, but don't gloat over it. Don't be happy about it. Don't, go, ha, he got what he deserved. Because the Lord may change his mind at that. You see what it says? Lest the Lord see it and be displeased and turn away his anger from him? Yeah. Wow. Very, very significant proverb. Very, very significant. All right, let's back up a chapter. Because the latter third of 22, as I've said, and all of 24 are one topic. Now we go into chapter 23. And chapter 23, the first several verses, at least, are about influence, the dangers of influence. That is, how having power and having authority can be a problem. It can be a danger. So chapter 23, verse 1. When you sit down to dine with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you're a man of great appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for it is deceptive food. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone, for wealth certainly makes itself wings, like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. Do not eat the bread of a selfish man or desire his delicacies, for as he thinks within himself, so he is. He says to you, eat, drink, but his heart is not with you. You will vomit up the morsel you have eaten and waste your compliments. Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. So here we have Solomon describing leaders with whom you might be in contact with. They might invite you to dinner. And he's warning you that such leaders, they're playing politics. They have ulterior motives. They don't really want to fellowship with you. They want something from you or to do something to you. That's what verses 1 through 3 say. The king has ulterior motives. Now look at how he ties in wealth, because so often leadership has also, you know, a connection with wealth. And he says wealth takes wings. And so he's warning really those who either are leaders or aspire to be leaders, and he's warning them, you know, if you want to be a leader, if you want to be a big shot in some way, and you want to do it because of the financial gain, just be aware that that is tenuous. That is very volatile, and it doesn't always last. And then verses 6 through 8 that we just read, he's saying basically meetings with leaders, meetings with people who are movers and shakers in society is often fraught with politics. It's often fraught with politics. And he warns you at the end, verse 9, to keep your mouth shut. In these kinds of meetings and these kinds of interactions, it's best to not open your mouth. Look what he says. Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, which, by the way, is the leader. This is the context. For he will despise the wisdom of your words. Yeah. Okay, well, let's continue in this chapter and look at what Solomon's going to say about the training of children, which is one of his favorite subjects, and he comes back to it several times. And in fact, he's devoted whole chapters in the first part of the book, chapters 1 through 7, is all about training children. And now we get to the middle of chapter 23, going through to the end. And it's all about training children. So we won't read the whole thing, but there are a lot of good things here. Verse 13. Do not hold back discipline from the child. This is chapter 23, verse 13. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you beat him with the rod, he will not die. You will beat him with the rod and deliver his soul from Sheol. Okay, it bears reminding that Solomon is not saying whack your kids. I mean, not particularly. This is a very touchy subject. And, you know, corporal punishment is pretty much an obsolete idea today. But it wasn't even, you know, we don't have to go back thousands of years. It wasn't even 50 years ago. It wasn't a sensitive subject, but it is now. And I understand the reasons for that. There have been some very big abuses. I myself grew up in without parents, and so had surrogate parents, many of them actually, in the foster care system. So I understand. I'm very aware of you know, the tension and the issues at play here. So look at this as somewhat hyperbole, somewhat exaggeration. You know, even though Solomon will bring up the rod, that is, you know, corporal punishment, he'll bring it up a few times. It doesn't always mean he's saying to beat your kid. Now, I still believe that there are contexts in which physical discipline is warranted. I don't think it needs to be all the time, not even most of the time, and probably a very small amount of the time. But nonetheless, let's just take this as hyperbole for the most part. And what he's saying is, you need to bring your child up short sometimes. You need to bring him up short, give him consequences, give him or her consequences, and make sure you follow through on them. That's all he's saying. There are other verses in Proverbs in which he'll say, you don't want to let your kids just run loose with no guidelines, no barriers, no boundaries and consequences at all. You don't want to do that. That's all he's saying here. So don't take that the wrong way. All right. Look at verse 15, chapter 23. My son, this is a hypothetical son, coming from a hypothetical father. If your heart is wise, my own heart will be glad, and my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. This is Solomon saying that parents have a right and aspire to, they long to, look back, or I should say, look at their grown children and be proud of them, of the way they turned out. Solomon mentions this several times in Proverbs. He knows that parents want to feel good about how their children reached adulthood and how they live, and of course, living for God would be our hope. All right, jump down to verse 22 of chapter 23. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Verse 24, the father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise son will be glad in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her rejoice who gave birth to you. 26, give me your heart, my son, and let your eyes delight in my ways. And then he goes on, and what he'll do is he'll revisit a couple of the topics that he's talked about already in previous chapters, and the first one is drunkenness. I'm sorry, no. The first one is adultery, and then the next one is drunkenness. And he's going to remind the reader that parents have an obligation to steer their children in the right way and help them not fall into the temptations, the many temptations and the many failings that are waiting for the young person especially. So look what he says. Verse 27, a harlot is a deep pit, and an adulterous woman is a narrow well. Surely she lurks as a robber and increases the faithless among men. Wow. And then the rest of the chapter, verses 29 through 35, are about being drunk, about drunkenness. And it's a pretty poetic little section. It's really not only poetic, but also kind of sad, kind of hurtful in a way. He says, who has woe, who has sorrow, who has wounds? Those who linger over wine. He says, don't look at it. Don't want it and be attracted to it. It sparkles in the cup, and it goes down smoothly, but it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. You will see strange things, and your mind will utter perverse things, verse 33. And then he says at the end that the person wakes up from drunkenness and they take another drink. Sounds like addiction to me. At any rate, the warning is, you know, the ancients and the Bible in general, all over, Old Testament and New Testament, don't denounce alcohol. I know there's some factions within Christianity that say that it does, but it doesn't. I'm saying this, I'm not a drinker, so I'm not advocating drinking. But the Bible itself does not condemn drinking. What it condemns is drunkenness. Now, some hearers of this will see the logic in that and understand it. And some hearers will say, well, what's the difference? What's the difference between drinking and being drunk? Well, that's the problem. And it's only really been a problem, really, in modern society. I think in ancient times, at least among the Jews, let's say, there was a distinct line between drinking and drunkenness. It was a very understandable line. But today, in our society, it's almost impossible to find that line. And we could go on and on and on, and, you know, we could do a whole sermon on this. But the point is that it's drunkenness that the Bible condemns, not drinking per se. But, number one, there's a very fine line today between those two. And number two, with some people, and I'm not dissing those folks, I'm just saying some individuals, for them, the line is even harder to see, because they have a certain attraction. They have a certain, failing with alcohol. And maybe those people should stay away from it completely. And more, there's actually quite a bit, as we just saw in chapter 31, there's actually quite a bit in Proverbs about leaders not drinking. And in fact, there are some denominations within the church, within Christianity, that actually take it as a requirement for leadership in their churches that you don't drink. And I'm all for that. I don't have a problem with that. But again, just know what Scripture is saying. And as you read this, verses 29 through 35, let it sink in. Let it make an impact. It's saying that that alcohol, aside from being, it's not bad. It's not saying it's bad. It's saying that it's deceptive and it's difficult to deal with. You have to be really, really careful with it. That's all. That's all it's saying. Okay. Well, let's move on to the next thing we're going to do in Proverbs. And that is, we'll look at 15 gems. 15 gems. And these gems are basically five verses picked from each chapter of the following chapters, chapter 27, chapter 28, and chapter 29. And what this will do is this will bring us up to having covered pretty much all of Proverbs up to chapter 30, which is our goal, is to get to chapter 30. But right now, 27, 28, and 29. And we start at 27, and let's pick a few verses here, five verses. And the first one is verse 1, 27, 1. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Yeah, how would you put that in modern English? It would be, don't presume on life. And this must be where James got his teaching on the very same subject, presumption, in the book of James, in the New Testament. So keep that in mind. Pretty sure that there's a connection between those two things. Look at verse 2. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. Wow. What an interesting passage. Don't toot your own horn, we would say today, huh? Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't say that the horn can't be tooted. It's just you shouldn't do it yourself, right? All right, verse 5. Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the words, wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. In the church, it is understood that all of us should be accountable to one another. In fact, that's what membership is all about. If you are in a church that has a policy of membership, you know, they want you to become a member, not just attend, but you know, sign up as a member. The reason for membership is accountability. And accountability is nothing more than a big word for a very simple thing, and that is being submissive and subject to one another. So we should be able to be taught. We should be teachable. We should allow people to speak into our lives. That's what the word rebuke means, to confront, especially leaders in the church. And so this is a very interesting concept. And it's better, it says here, it's better to have someone get in your face if they do it for the right reason than for them to pretend to like you and pretend to be okay with you and pretend that everything's good. Do you see? It's a very powerful idea. Very, very powerful. All right, verse 7 of chapter 27, and this is one of my all-time favorite verses, probably one of my top 10 favorite verses in Proverbs, maybe even in the top 5. 27:7. A sated man loathes honey, but to a famished man any bitter thing is sweet. Now, let me ask you a question. He says, loathes honey. So he's talking about eating honey. Is anything in the previous verses connected to that? No. Is anything in the following verses connected to that? No. So is he talking about eating? And in all the Proverbs that we've covered so far, you know, we're pretty far along now, chapter 27 out of 31 chapters. We're far along. Has there been much metaphor in this book? Oh boy. I can only think of one book in the Old Testament. Well, no. I can only think of one book among the wisdom books, the five wisdom books, with more metaphor than Proverbs, and that's Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is metaphor from beginning to end. But Proverbs has an awful lot also. So this is an allegory. This is a word picture. This is a life lesson. And guess what? It's a very New Testament idea. In fact, I think it's just as meaningful and on the same subject as Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18. I really do. Let me read it again. A sated man loathes honey, but to a famished man any bitter thing is sweet. This is a person who's grasping. And it's talking about fulfillment. You can be fulfilled or not. You can be complete in your life or not. You can be filled, not just fulfilled, but filled completely and not always be grasping and being needy. Solomon is saying this. And it lines up with what Paul will say in Ephesians 5, where he talks about being filled with the Spirit. Yeah. All of us, from the fall, have this tendency to want something to fill us up. And we grab a lot of different things, don't we? We overeat. We might drink. We might do drugs. It might be sex. It might be fame. It might be our job. It might be our possessions. It might be, you know, relationships. Whatever it is, it might be money. Whatever it is, we're always grasping, aren't we? And Solomon says, you should get to a point where you're fulfilled. You're not always looking for something to please you, to make you significant, to make you, you know, to make you fulfilled. And of course, that's a New Testament idea, because that's what Jesus Christ does. He finally fills us up. He finally makes us complete. Let's read it again. A sated man loathes honey, but to a famished man, any bitter thing is sweet. He doesn't say every bitter thing. He says any bitter thing, meaning anything that comes along. Any, you know, he's diminishing. Solomon is diminishing. He's making small all of our little choices that we make to try to get significance, try to get meaning in our lives. And he's saying they're puny. They're tiny. Any bitter thing. Hopefully that doesn't describe you. Hopefully you're not like that. Always looking for the next high. Always looking for the next, you know, thrill. The next big thing that will make you happy. But really doesn't, because you keep on doing it. And this is significant. This is a very significant verse. It's a very significant verse. Let's go over to verse 17. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Pretty interesting. The word man there is actually male. It's not just mankind. It's actually the man, not the woman. So there's a certain relationship that men have with men. Obviously, we're not talking about homosexuality. We're talking about how a man in fellowship with another man, you know, in the family of God, they're Christians, how they can play off each other, how they can, you know, encourage each other and challenge each other, and that's what men do. And it's a very interesting verse. All right, chapter 28, verse 1, the wicked flee when no one is pursuing, but the righteous are bold as a lion. You know what I think about when I read this? I think about the person who's driving along and they keep looking in the mirror looking for police, looking for a police car. Yeah, some of us live that way. The wicked flee when no one is pursuing. They're a little bit, what's the word, obsessive. They're a little bit, you know, controlled, bound with worry and with fear that they might get caught doing something. There are people like that, for sure. For sure. All right. It's the same chapter, 28, over to verse 14. We've already seen this one, but let's look at it again. How blessed is the man who fears always, but he who hardens his heart will fall into calamity. Now, why is this verse significant? Why did I pick it? Because it gives us another layer. It gives us another insight into what the fear of God is. How blessed is the man who fears always. Talking about the fear of God, which in previous recordings we've talked about. We spent a whole podcast on how to define the fear of God, so go check it out. But what is he saying here? He's saying you can fear God, or you can have a hardened heart. And in Scripture what that means is an unyielding, an unlistening, an unresponsive heart to God. So fearing God, then, must include that tender, receptive heart. That's what it includes. All right. Let's go down to verse 23 of chapter 28. He who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with the tongue. That's just like the one we saw in 27, isn't it? Chapter 27. That's just like the one about 27, verse 5, about open rebuke and all that. Yeah. Yeah. We have to have people in our lives who will tell us the truth about ourselves. Hopefully we do. Verse 25 of the same chapter, 28. Verse 25. An arrogant man stirs up strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will prosper. Well, that's really interesting. Let's read it again. He who trusts in his... verse 25. An arrogant man stirs up strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will prosper. It sounds like... the wording here is a little stiff, and the word arrogant, some Bibles have a footnote there that say really a broad soul, literally in the Hebrew a broad soul. That means someone who really, it's less arrogant as it is needy. Someone very needy, someone very almost dependent, you might say, on others. Such a man is liable to stir up strife. Such a man who is like that one in chapter 27 who's always grasping, always yearning, always wanting, and not being fulfilled every time he gets it. A very needy person. This is a person who tends to sow discord and disrupt and pollute peace and harmony and unity within the brethren, within the church. Stirs up strife. But he who trusts in the Lord, by contrast, he who trusts in the Lord, he who looks to God for what he wants and what he needs, will always prosper, it says. Prosper. That's an interesting idea. Prosper. He'll have enough. Do you see? Unlike the one in 27:7, who's always grasping, not having enough, this guy will have enough. Yeah. Verse 26, he who trusts in his own heart is a fool, but he who walks wisely will be delivered. So, there's two kinds of wisdom. You get that? He who trusts in his own heart, or he who walks in real wisdom. So, there's self-wisdom, and there's godly wisdom. In that one verse. Pretty neat, huh? Chapter 29. Let's go over to verse 1. A man who hardens his neck after much reproof will suddenly be broken beyond remedy. We see that in chapter 1. In the middle of chapter 1, where the hypothetical father is talking to the hypothetical son, and actually using the voice of wisdom. Wisdom is being personified as an individual, as a person. And wisdom is telling the person who has opposed God, who has diminished God, who has fought against God. Wisdom is saying, hey, at the end, this is not going to go well with you. Constantly fighting God is not going to go well. That's what it's saying here. A man who hardens his heart, verse 1, after much reproof, will suddenly be broken beyond remedy. Verse 5. A man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps. Whoa. What's it saying? That flattery... Now, we know what flattery is. It's insincere. It's not real. I mean, it's okay for someone to say something good about you. But if you detect that it's a little over the top or that it's insincere, that's flattery. And flattery is deception. Deception is lying. It's a trap. Solomon says, watch out for the person who heaps on you flattery. Watch out for them. Verse 13, the poor man and the oppressor have this in common. The Lord gives light to the eyes of both. We actually looked at this one already. But this is saying something really kind of interesting. It's saying that God controls and God gives and God blesses and gives grace to both good and bad people. Now we're saying good and bad in the way they act. You know, how they behave. People who prey on others and people who don't prey on others is the specific context. God gives grace and loves both. It's a New Testament idea also, because the Lord himself said that God sends rain on the just and the unjust. Now, rain would be a very important thing to an agrarian society, right? So that's what he's saying. He's saying God sustains and blesses and gives to both those who acknowledge him and those who don't. And here in Proverbs, those who prey on others and those who are the prey. Interesting, isn't it? That, again, is a big theological concept. You really have to have your theology well structured to really accept this. But it's there. It's there all over the Bible. That God loves both. He loves both those who don't even think about him and those who think about him all the time. All right, verse 20. Do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There's more hope for a fool than for him. Now, we know from all that we've gone through in Proverbs so far that a fool is a pretty bad person. A fool is someone who is militant against God. And Solomon is saying that someone who can't control his mouth is worse than a fool. Now, we recently covered speech, the topic of speech in Proverbs, and you should remember from that why that is so. What you say, how you use your mouth in speech, is potentially deadly. And Solomon says, if it's out of control for you, you're worse than a fool. You're worse than a fool. And then lastly, the last thing we'll do in this section of 15 gems is look at verse 25. Chapter 29, verse 25. The fear of man brings a snare, but he who trusts in the Lord will be exalted. Now, parallelism in the Old Testament, where a statement is followed by a statement. Sometimes they're contrasting, sometimes they're complementary, but they're almost always parallel. And here we have a contrast. Here we have a contrast. Fearing man or trusting in the Lord. So we get an insight. We get an insight into what fearing man means. And there's a lot of ways to parse this, but the bottom line is, it reminds me of what Jesus said about the Pharisees. He said that they do things to be seen by men, but they are weak in their affection toward God. In other words, they care more about what people think than what God thinks. That's the fear of man. The fear of man is simply living to an audience of many instead of living to an audience of one. And I know that's a hard thing. I know it's a very hard thing to not care about what other people think. It is a hard thing. But Scripture tells us that it's not good. It's not good. Even psychiatrists will tell you that today. Imagine that. That being beholden and being bound to what people think is not healthy. And Scripture here says, it's a trap. The fear of man is a trap, a snare. But he who trusts in the Lord will be exalted. In other words, you will escape that trap. You will not only escape it, but thrive if you care more about what God thinks. All right, well, that'll do us for today's study. Next up is the next two chapters, chapter 30 and chapter 31. And hope you'll be back for those. I think you'll find them very, very interesting. They are two of the most difficult chapters in all of Proverbs. Isn't that something? We get to the end and then we get this difficult part. But they are. They're difficult. They're very difficult chapters. Chapter 30 in particular is the most hard to interpret. It's a very difficult chapter to navigate. And we'll see how that works next time. And until then, believe God.